Hello, I'm Dr. Dwayne Hartman, the Trance Alchemist, and I'm welcoming you here to my podcast on Spotify, formerly from Anchor FM. Don't know what happened to it, but I simply found myself now broadcasting from Spotify. So, there we go. Today I'm interviewing Shae Lee Edwards. This will be our fourth interview, fourth chat, fourth talk, and it's always delightful because we explore many different things. We explore different levels of consciousness, we states of being, all the magical stuff that will take you from a stuck reality into freedom. So stay tuned. I hope you enjoy this podcast, and I look forward to speaking to you soon. Well, hello, Shae Lee. We're back doing another delightful interview, eh?
Okay.
So, what's new with you?
Oh, man. This past week had several experiential shifts, which for me translates to being able to see things with more options, greater awareness of my power, and less fear. So it's like, oh man, you know, rather than have to take, it's looking at a map, and rather than having to go straight, left, right, I can go directly. It's almost, it allows for more direct movement, more simplicity.
Yes. Simplicity is nice, isn't it? Just breathe in, breathe out, and go where you want to go, right? You remind me so much of an unbounded spirit. You know, totally free, unbounded. You know, you're right there creating in the expansion of Source itself or God itself, this expanding creation. And you remind me so much of you being right in that, just going woohoo, right? Life is fun.
Thank you. Yeah, I, for one reason or another, had beliefs that allowed for that type of, let's say, three-dimensional movement rather than just, you know, on a track. And what's interesting is I also had some beliefs that conflicted with some of the upside of that movement. And I did a spell of finding myself because I didn't trust that type of movement. And so it's been a really interesting experience in rediscovering the safety of it and really what the illusion that fear superimposes on top of it. There's nothing. It's there. All experiences, as far as I can tell, like what we really are seeking is that sense of aliveness, that freedom, that relaxation, and allowing of just allowing, period.
And I totally agree with you. That's what we're looking for. Home, a state within ourselves, but we don't realize it's within ourselves. We're, you know, a lot of people are trying to make it out of what's out there, and what's out there is only out there because you put it out there. And so when we focus inward, and then, you know, this week I've been talking a lot about the core of who you are. And that core, as long as that core is stable, I mean, at some point we got to think about this. I mean, we're at one point going to get ejected from planet Earth and 3D here out into the infinite. They call it, some call that death, but But when you get ejected out into the infinite and you're only surrounded by eternity, a lot of people will flail. You know, beings will flail because they have no grounding, right? And they're looking for something that would give them some solidity, which is a reincarnation, right? And they're back in here playing it again. But if you find stability within yourself and you can float out there and be stable out there, and that your everything comes from you, then you can create whatever you want in the infinite, right? And we don't have to panic. But a lot of times that's what's happening on planet Earth right now with people, is they're trying to find their stability in something out there rather than in here. But as soon as they go in here and feel their stability, then they create stability in their reality. You know? I don't know. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think at like at a human level, that experience is similar to looking for making choices because, and having a complete rationale analysis set, like of thoughts, and versus just allowing it to be because. And it's not to say don't take in information and interact with it rationally or logically. It's saying that that's not where the answers are. And I work with people who are very bright and able to entertain a lot of information, and they ultimately feel swamped, like as I did, because you can't sort out the more you know intellectually, the more you see you can't know. And so that stability that you're trying to seek by running the numbers to find the correct answer, the correct path, the correct thing, you can't. And so with what you're saying, the way that I hear it, at like what you can, one could use with it now, is really playing around with allowing your reasoning to be as simple as because, like, I want to.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So I want to. Why did you do that? Because I wanted to. I wanted the experience of it. And it's all okay.
I find that's a particularly helpful tool to when someone starts to self-reflect and be able to reach in their past and within themselves and recognize patterns and explain, it's because of my dad, it's because of this. And it's not that that's not right, but it's also that it's not the only right. And the more of the action, there's a Sadhguru quote I love that says something along the lines of, the moment that you ascribe your choices to something in the past, you've like given up your life. And I think it is helpful to allow that there are influences beyond the moment, but at the same time, not at the expense of claiming the power that you have now, the choice that you have now, like, because I said I want to.
I like that, because that brings it back to ownership, that you own your own reality, and there is only one reality, yours and mine, but everyone has an individual reality, and there's no real cluster reality, where, and sure, we are all living under some sort of reality here, but It isn't one reality. Every person I meet has a different reality. And so everyone also has the ability to move out of that said reality into another reality. It's their free choice. So they can have a reality where they're very, very controlled. They can recognize that, and then they can say, well, I did this to me. Own it, then you can change it. But if you don't own it, you can never change it. Mm-hmm. It's somebody else's problem, or somebody else did this to me, or whatever. But at some point we say, I did this to me. And if I did this to me, then I can create something different. I'm thinking, what do you think?
Yeah, I explained that phenomenon, like we're all sitting in the same room wearing our own virtual reality goggles. And there's some overlap in the landscape based on whatever has been collectively put in motion. But just because it's part of the collective motion doesn't mean you have to subscribe to it necessarily. There are some, I've tried several times to transcend some of the more like physics type ones, and I'm not there yet, but from what I can tell, it really is just a function of belief. And with what you're talking about as far as power and ownership, I think one of the other things that's helpful to remember is that you've never given your power away, you just assigned it. And so you don't have to take back power, you only have to take back the assignment of power, which is really the idea that someone else has it. And
very brilliant.
Thanks. And I think when we're looking at kind of that idea of you've always had it, sometimes it's a little tough to digest when the person across from you is saying like, no, I was three, I didn't really have a choice. And to me, that's when it's helpful to allow for yes and, which I think is another power move when you are claiming your total experience, where yes and allows for the paradox of like the small self and the large self, the individual and life are always one. And so while it's you know, it's a little bit of like circumstantially it would have seemed that the three-year-old did not have power, and yet in some ways, I don't know, I'll pass it back to you. You take it from there. See what you can do with that.
You're saying that the child is the one with the power in us, believe it or not. So everybody's looking for this higher entity that, you know, they might call their higher self or whatever. But when you get right down to it, it is the unbounded spirit, that child, that creative little being that, you know, takes joy in just watching a butterfly, that really has the power to move mountains, do miracles, you know. And it's even written, you know, only through the mind of a child will you witness heaven, you know. And it is because it is that childlike wonder that is creating. And it also creates in another way. It gets scared, and so it starts creating, right? I remember a time when I was a boy, and my dad was milking cows in the barn, and I wandered out of the barn. I was just a real little guy. I wandered out of the barn and I went out into the dark, and I wasn't afraid. And I had done that many times. I was chasing a moth, and I was chasing it out there into the pitch dark. And I wasn't afraid until one day I was. One day I thought I heard a growl from in the bush. And all of a sudden I had that fear washed through me. And from that moment, I had fear in my system. Otherwise, I didn't have it before, right? So then I started creating with a little bit of fear. You know what I mean? I think we all have that point where we were absolutely fearless. And a lot of times, even if you see it in the animal kingdom, I seen a lion, you know, big lion, and this gazelle come running around the corner. And it was so scared that it jumped right into the lion's arms, basically into its, and the lion didn't do anything to it because it was such an innocent thing. In fact, the lion defended the gazelle. So that state, that childlike wonder, that innocence, that just love is a powerful state.
Yeah, that's really profound as far as the inner child being the creative, like what is currently or what is more commonly ascribed to the higher self, it really being through the inner child, because I think the inner child contemporarily is always seen as this like wounded, beat up thing, but it kind of like you're saying, it's really the star. That's where the imagination is, that's where the uniqueness is. And I think it goes to, you know, they have less rules, less ideas of how things should be. Those, that maze I opened with, where it's like, oh, this, I have to go this way, that's the only way there is, when really it is a multi, you know, direct, there's always direct.
I found that is different. There's the wounded inner child, and that's in a certain path of our life, a certain area. But before that, I call it the magical inner child, and I help bring that magical inner child out. That magical inner child can heal you, can pay attention while the adult is running around doing whatever, and the magical inner child can come and, you know, put their hand on your heart and change the whole thing that you're perceiving, right? If we start contacting and allowing this to happen with the magical inner child, can take you to where you were before this, if you want, you know, and meet the people there and understand why you came here, all of that stuff. I got a lot more mileage out of that than what I did with what they call the higher self. You see, I'm always aware of words, eh? The higher self puts that self outside of you. It's above you. It's higher. And so my question was, why isn't it in us, right? But then working with the wounded inner child and then discovering the magical inner child, that we all came from source energy. We were all born here. And we were all convinced to bury that part of ourselves and live a different life. And people are sad. People are depressed. People are unexpressed. People are all of these things. Why? Because they've had to wear a mask all their life, be somebody else. And I think that if we're going to live outside the box of what this hypnosis has been, societal hypnosis, that we have to start taking steps and come going outside the box, because it's a reality created that, even though, like you said, everyone has their own glasses on and their own thing, that box reality is trying to influence even that there is only one reality, and it's not a, as we're watching, it's not a very nice one that's coming up, right?
Yeah, I think as far as the higher self being beyond, I think that's an interesting point as well, in that I'm sort of interpreting the magical inner child as the spell of life.
Yeah.
Where I sort of think of it like, those, I'm an 80s baby, and they had Play-Doh presses.
Yep.
And you know, you select a mold and then press the Play-Doh through the mold. And I think that the magical inner child has its own shape. It's unique. It's an end of like a unique expression, divine expression. And then the ideas, particularly those from wounds, which I think at a collective we have. So when you're saying reality at a whole, the way that we're being presented is not that nice. I think we have collective wounding, and that's an aggressive word, but really it means thinking that diverges from wholeness, thinking that diverges from truth or love, or has some aspects of separation in it. And that all of that like ultimately constitutes the mask, which is, I think you said in our first or second episode, like you just take the mask off. Like there's not, it's like you said, it's the mask that's been wounded. It's just ideas. The core element has always and will always be whole.
That's right. And we have difficulty, healing, because we're healing still. Okay. The one thing that I really appreciate about you is the fact that you take perception and you can flip it. You can take a perception and you can, how you perceive life, and you take that perception and say, hey, I wonder what it would feel like if I flipped that. And then you find that freedom. And that's so true. Okay. So like, we all went to school and we all had a teacher that didn't think too much of us, right? And you ever notice when you get around that teacher and you start to talk to that teacher, next thing you know, you're fumbling your words and you're coming off as not intelligent at all and everything, but yet you could be with your friends and sound intelligent and be intelligent, because that person holds a strong perception of you, that teacher. And so when you get around that teacher, that perception starts to affect you, right? And then unless you have a very strong self-perception and you can key it up at that point in time, then what happens is that teacher's perception will win, and you'll start fumbling your words and whatever, right? So we've all had that experience. But what would happen if you could flip your own perceptions in your own head? So the teacher walks up strong and you flip and you see yourself as bigger than the teacher, that you're looking at the teacher down there somewhere or something like of this. I'm just using this as an example. Your perception flips, and then all of a sudden everything flips, right? You no longer feel inferior, right? Now, what would happen? Because you take a look at society, and society has this ongoing, because of my study of perceptions, society has this whole perception, government has this whole perception that we're not smart enough, and everybody acts kind of that way, right? We're in control. When we're in a democracy, what democracy and control are two separate things, aren't they? Does that make sense?
I think, sorry, with the barking and distracting me a little. When you were talking about, I was with you until you said how democracy and control, you're saying they're two separate things.
Yeah. You can't have control. You can't control a society and have a democracy at the same time.
And that, I think both of them are still predicated on several ideas, like one, the necessity of it, two, like from where does safety and coordination originate? You know, there's so much. Every time we contemplate, we begin with different premises, and some of them are obvious, but the more subtle ones, like you're saying, are in perception and language, and they assume the existence or the non-existence of things before you even realize, like, you've made that choice. So if we're looking at unboundedness, that's why I think the imagination gets so much like clout, because that the imagination is stepping beyond what is assumed and then reaching for what can be. And I love the idea of kind of like that manipulation of the visual for the teacher and the child. And I think of kind of what you're talking about, that phenomenon, like we all have with our VR glasses, boom boxes. And some people's boom boxes are really loud. Their music is really loud, and their music can influence how you dance. You lose your own beat, you go to their beat. And I think that visual technique of just like turning down their boombox or turning up your boombox or putting on these, it really can make a difference. It doesn't have to be this laborious thing. You know, it can be very simple and playful like that.
I learned that from using and practicing NLP. Now there's different things, you know, that's happened over the years, but I was fortunate to be able to take NLP quite close to the source, to Richard Bandler and John Grinder. And what started out was very fascinating. What started out with playing with ideas and perceptions and flipping them and whatever, was a very, very interesting thing to play in those days. Right? And I still use it, what I learned there. But I mean, you know, like everything, as it goes on and gets more and more complex. Or you can say convoluted, yeah. One of the two, but
commercialized.
Yeah,
I think let's see my note here. With the other technique that I think that can be helpful when you feel like you're influenced unduly by someone else's projection is, I've been thinking about humor as the seventh sense, the lucky seventh sense. And it can break a lot of the seriousness and investment that we have in the constructs we're working with because of, I'm sorry, he's, who he's talking to. And that can also allow for the unboundedness. In humor, you're not automatically saying like, I'm good, ain't this funny? And so I think that there is a secret door there as well.
Yes, and it's a very delightful door I love to use, is humor. Because the thing that is problems are serious, eh?
Yeah.
And humor's not. So just by laughing at the problem, you're already doing something, right? When you start to laugh, when it's the seventh time you've went with a load of groceries to the car and you reach in your pocket and you realize that the keys are in your other pocket. It's frustrating until you laugh and then it's over. And I think that analogy works for a lot of things in our life, because when we go to that place outside of the box and we experience something that's called Satori, when you look at life and you realize what it's really been, a lot of people start to laugh and they can't stop. It's the funniest thing ever. They were so serious. Now you go up to them and you try to be serious and they start to laugh at you because they can't join you there once they touch that hem.
Yeah, I think at some point last year, so the evolution through language or beyond language kind of happened. I guess I was asking for it, and I started looking at the NLP stuff 2016, 2017. I don't know, but at some point it was bubbling up for me to integrate the unreality of reality and the unboundedness. And at the same time, I was exploring healing my heart. And I had lost my sister in 2011. And during this time, I was crying. I was like sobbing pretty profusely on the floor, like just allowing myself to explore like emotions I didn't make space for before. And at one point, I like started to laugh because I was like, oh shit, she didn't even really exist. You know, like she wasn't She can't ever die because she wasn't ever born. And while the experience of her has shifted forms, I stopped sobbing, and it was coming from like the center of my being. I stopped crying and I went and got a snack. I was like, I have my snack, and I was like, you gotta be friggin' kidding me. Like, is this really, is this, what a mind fuck, you know, to have these two, you know, they're both, it's both true, you know? And then it's really, what way do you wanna, what truth, or how do you wanna interact? What serves you? Like, when I'm working with this non-physical information, I'm generally looking for what's practical. How does this improve the human experience? And it's like, well, you know, it's really up to you. Like, what frame is meaningful and helpful to you? How do you want to take it?
Okay, because the truth is, your client created the problem, and your client wants to release the problem. Is the truth of it all, when you walk in and you go to work with somebody, you realize that they created the problem and now they want to release the problem. The same thing that manifested the problem is going to be the same thing that manifests a solution. The only problem is alignment.
Yeah.
You align to. What God do you pray to? The God of depletion and you know, sadness, and everything goes downwards? Or do you pray to the God that says that you're free and released and ready to go? Right? And you'll have people arguing, you know, people will argue and say, no, the only way is through deeper experience of the thing that you don't want. And other people would say, no, all you have to do is inside you feel the woohoo and just head forward into the expansion of Source itself. Because you're creating it all. You're creating everything. Right?
Yeah, I think with the illusion and the mind mazes, it's easy to get lost in the lower experiences because there's some background idea that's right, like a learned idea that's right, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think particularly with loss and change and things, it's like wrong to allow for happiness, wrong to celebrate, you know, and you don't necessarily recognize you're operating under the influence of those principles. We never have this much traffic upstairs.
I don't even hear it on my side.
Oh, really? You don't hear him? That?
Well, that was a dog, was it?
Yeah, he's my neighbor's dog. He sits with me sometimes when she's at work.
Oh.
Yeah, you don't necessarily, I think that's why your state is such a, like, what do I believe to be true that this is the emotional experience that I'm having? And you can explore it at that level of detail, or you can do what you're saying, where you consider and play around with what would be a preferred state and ask into that. Like the analysis portion, as far as I can tell, it's helpful until it's not, you know, it's fun until it's not. Is it necessary? I don't know. Maybe in pieces, if you think that it is, but I spent a lot of time there and I generally recommend, like, don't.
Yeah.
You miss the point of experience, the joy.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people that are caught in, literally caught in therapy, and they never get to the healing because they can't imagine the healing yet. The moment they imagine the healing, then they start moving towards that healing. They start, you know, a lot of the things that I do is just simply elicit from the client what would be their feeling of healing, and then help them feel that in their body, and guess what? They start to heal. It's a miracle. But really, what it is it's the client themselves that feel a different feeling inside. Have you ever noticed that in most of what we've got going on here, we have visualization, we have affirmation, and then there's a blank. But now let's go back and take a look. Visualization, affirmation, and then blank. But yet we know that everyone talks about this feeling is the secret. Mm. We got tons and tons of information out there and therapies and everything else on how to visualize better, how to say what you need to say to yourself better, but nobody's working with the feeling. Mm. Okay, so in NLP, you know that there's the visual, the auditory, and the kinesthetic, right? Those are the three systems we need to talk about. Now, feeling, if you could shift your feeling, which is the core vibration of who you are and what you think your life is, if you could shift your feeling about life to something else, then you know darn well you manifest something different, right? So the real key that what people need to focus on is how to move emotion, not have that client be able to move emotion from one state to another. My business partner and a very good old friend of mine, his name was Larry McLaughlin, and he wrote the books Advanced Language Patterns and Advanced Language Patterns Mastery. But he had some really interesting floor anchoring exercises that he used to do, right? And we would get out on the floor, and we would in our mind draw three circles, or we'd even get tape out and tape out three circles, right? You know, and he'd have us think about the state we don't want, and we'd step into this circle, and we'd kind of elicit it, bring it up, whatever. And he'd say, now take a hold of that and just drop it here. And now step away from it. Now we're doing an action, right? Playing with the action, it really activates the feeling and the body. The body as well. The body needs movement to do things, right? So a lot of times in my sessions, I like people to do things. They're going to cut the cords. Don't sit there and do it in your head. Grab an imaginary sword and really cut those. That's giving a strong message and a feeling, right? But anyway, with this floor anchoring, you drop the emotion here off, and then you'd step back into a neutral circle and start creating what you wanted standing over there in that other circle. And you'd create what you wanted as far as the state was concerned. And then when you were ready, you stepped over into that state and allow that to flow through your body, working with emotion, you see, and creating a shift. Now, once people get onto the fact that, hey, I don't have to sit here in depression all day long, I could think of another state of being that I wanted to be in, and I could elicit that, go step into it and experience it, right? And now they've shifted the very core of what's manifesting their life. So if they stay in the depression, only more depression gets created, because that's what they're resonating. Depression. But if they go over there and they realize that they do have flexibility in their emotion, and they step into that newer, freer state, well, now, a new vibration, which is creating a new reality, right? So you see, my concern with doing a lot of therapy in the past with all of the stuff that this has happened to you, yes, we need to go in and shift it and get out. But a lot of people are stuck there. They're stuck there resonating that, and now that's casting out into their future, creating a reality the same, because that's their vibration. How are they ever going to get out of that trap? They won't, unless they create in their mind what they would look like, sound like, and feel like healed. Right? Now, some people will take a pill or a herb or a tea, and just before they take the tea, they see themselves being healed by this tea, and that there's a different state that'll happen when they take this tea, and then they do the action of drinking the tea, and they become that new vibration. But it's just a permission slip to be the God that you already are. You can change state. You can do whatever you want to do. Is that
Yeah, I'm with all of that. And I think that here's I think the imagining of a state beyond the familiar state is very important. And I think sometimes that can be hard for people who have always felt below a certain threshold, you know, to even experientially like reach for what that might not be.
Yeah. And then so simply imagine what it would be like to go beyond that threshold that they put there. Right.
Yeah. So here's the way that I've been kind of facilitating that same shift, but differently. So with the two circles, rather than progress across them, I'm facilitating more of a teleport and doing that through reaching for total love, release, and acceptance in the state as it is. So rather than attempt to shift or improve upon depression, really embracing the personal experience in love as silently as possible, without explanation, without forecasting anything, like a very intense presence that feels like coming into the body and feeling like this is okay. I'm not afraid. And that almost teleports you to a higher state, because the primary vibration is one of I'm okay, and that I love myself. I'm saying yes to my moment. And you would say yes to your moment in an improved state. And so essentially what you're creating is like a tunnel, a wormhole of like a set of circumstances where you wouldn't want to be somewhere else. So coming at it from like reducing resistance to the point of this is okay, and from then like this is okay, you're somewhere that is okay.
Yeah. What do you exactly, because what you're doing is you're coming up with unique ways to help them shift the emotional state they have in their body, which is manifesting the poor reality they're getting. So you're coming up with ways to have them shift emotionally. And that's the key.
No, I think emotions are such a, sorry.
You could do everything visualization, you could do everything auditory, nothing's going to change until you change that core vibration of feeling in the person. So they're going to recreate, because they haven't got to it, you know?
Yeah. I find, I just did a video on this yesterday or the day before, that in applying some of the visualization and affirmation techniques, there is underneath that a feeling of desperation, a feeling of fear. And so really you're just staying, like you said, in that vibration of like, how I am is not okay.
Yes. So you've seen it, my dear, you've seen it where, and you've experienced it. I've experienced it where I was in a panic and everything I was doing visually, auditorily, whatever, you know, take this, take that herb, do this thing, whatever. Nothing was changing because it wasn't changing the vibration of the base. The reason I used to ask myself, what is your modus operandi? What is your reason for doing anything? Well, I want to get away from this. That's not a good reason. Running from anything, fearful, whatever. Whenever I'd hit that, I'd say, okay, that's not a good reason. It's not going to manifest. What's going to manifest is more of the fear. So what is it that you truly want? Well, I want to feel comfortable. I want to feel relaxed. I want to feel relief, right? And so then I would do this with myself to where I felt, or I would create myself out there in relief and then step into it and take an exhale and be in relief. Now from relief, it's a whole different thing. Remember you were talking about laughter, right? Now, when people are in the panic, you know, I got to do that, whatever, right? But you magically help them go into laughter and they start laughing at the whole thing. There's nothing to work on, is there? Once they hit that satori, that joy, that laughter, there's nothing to work on because their core vibration shifted from fear to love. or fear to joy or fear to whatever, right?
Yeah, I think desire is so powerful. And I think in some ways, like in answering that question of like, what is the motive? What is, you know, what's my reasoning? If not to improve my situation, it's like, what if you loved yourself? You know, what if you wanted things to be good for you? And I think sometimes it's helpful to explore change from the standpoint of like, if you were caring for somebody or something else. So right. why should you suffer? I think there's a, you know, in that experiential ask, what would be better? A lot of the barriers I've hit, I see others hit is, you know, it's not okay to be great. It's not okay to have a lot because they don't, or this doesn't. And if you can really see that's one of those background ideas and beliefs I was talking about earlier that hooks you lower because you think it's doing something other than it is. When in truth, someone being in their greatness, being in their power, being in abundance is good for everybody.
Yes.
I think when we're looking at that shift, that experiential ask, what would I prefer? If you, all you have to do from what I can tell is open the door of possibility. That's it. And if you open the possibility door, you could encounter somebody who inspires you in a way or remind you of a feeling in a way that then puts a hook in that future state. And from what I can tell, the being, the psyche, the soul, you know, very bright, it'll work it out. It's really just being willing to allow that it's possible and to very gently progress. It doesn't have to be a sudden leap. If you aren't open or able to believe in that possibility, it can be a very gradual, the light switch turns on. But it's not, I think we talked about this in other episodes, like all I have to do is like let the world around me work. It's for me, you know? And I think when we were talking earlier about creatorship and kind of being the owner, in some ways that can be scary, total responsibility. What if I drive the car off the road? And in that, I found that it is helpful to allow like an all-loving Father, God, universe life where it's not, it's like it serves all when one is served. So really allowing, again, at a belief level for that possibility, which I think is in some ways new for many, was totally new. It was really hard for me to be like, oh, wow, I'm not supposed to be punished for error. It's like, you know, all my errors constantly being swept up in grace errors, you know.
Not unless you want to be, right? There is no punishment, right? And, but yeah, I understand and I agree that there's a lot of step into that and know you're worthy. Step into that and know that you are, this is your natural evolution that has been kept from you forever. From the time of Zeus, from before that even. You can step into the expansion of the universe and claim it inside of you and feel it. Do meditations where you feel that expansion. Realize that everything that you've experienced up to this point was only adding to the expansion. And you can write in transformation into that thing too. Wouldn't it be nice? You can also go inside and say to this greater being that's within you, surprise me with something today that's outside of my box of reality. Surprise me with something today that hasn't got to do with my belief, my attitude, my perception, right? Because we box ourselves in. And what we need is that lifeline, and that greater being inside of you is that lifeline. Then you start developing this really, really fun relationship with yourself. It's like, you got another trick? Can you show me something else today? And you start expanding this book. And pretty soon the box falls apart. And you're out there, you know. Everyone says, well, he's outside the box. Well, there's more and more people understanding that the box has only ever been a jail cell. That if we float outside the box, that's where the miracles and magic and all of that is. And it's ordinary when you're out there. Miracles are ordinary. Miracles happen all the time. You know?
Yeah, I agree that it's beyond the mind, which to me is in some ways, at least the mind as it pertains to a record-keeping function, or like, these are the rules, these are the things. Beyond that, things are pretty miraculous.
And yes.
It's nuts. Like, sometimes it had gotten so nuts that I was like, can we put a hold on this? Because, like, I can't right now. It's a lot. And it's subtle and profound and beautiful, and it's available to everybody.
It's been here since the beginning of time, and it'll remain here forever. All we have to do is step out of one concept of who we think we are into another concept. That perception shift of yourself, right? Shifting that perception, even ourselves are dictating to us what we live. But if we expand that perception, what if I was more? What if I am able to create miracles in my life? What if you start heading down that road and you start talking different in your own mind? That boombox you're talking about, it's behind them. It's playing awfully loud. I've met people like that. It's playing awfully loud, and they have a very difficult life. But you teach them how to turn that down, that boombox, and actually put a different tape in and start saying different things, and all of a sudden their life shifts and changes. Because that story that's going on repeatedly, going on in that boombox, is exactly what they're getting in life. Vibrationally. You know?
Yeah, I think staying with that as the metaphor, let's let the tapes be what is learned. So the conditioning, the beliefs, ideas, and the radio be what's natural. I think that when we're looking at being outside of the box, an aspect of that is being different. You know, it's not what you are inspired to pursue and value is different than what's in the box. And I think when we're looking at what is joy, you know, what does the child want to do? It wants to dance to its own song, you know? So I think that there is, when you are allowing it to go back to the radio, your primary station, your unique station, it's also recognizing that sense of being in harmony or moving in harmony with your own music is aliveness, is the end state, is joy, and it's gonna look different. Like, you know, once you're there, you don't really care. But when you're tasting it, there can be resistance at the mind level of like, yeah, but this is what matters. I should care about this. I need to make it look like this. I can't explain that. And if you just let yourself be with your own music enough, it kind of, those prior hooks fade off because they don't compare. Nothing compares to being with your own music.
When I was younger, I was a union insulator. I would go into these projects and insulate metal refineries and different things like that. The trouble with working with construction like that is that the job ends. It doesn't go on forever unless you get on maintenance or something, but the job, the construction job ends, and then you start a new job, right? With a new boss and a new, and I remember having such anxiety about starting the new job, right? And what there's expected of me and whether I was going to be able to, you know, stay out of getting in shit and everything else, right? Over there with this boss and all of that stuff. And it was all this chaos in my head. And then, of course, the first part of the job was all this chaos. And then finally, you know, as I calmed down, the job calmed down. And finally, I got it. If I didn't start with all of this chaos in my head about starting this job, if I actually went to the end where it was all calm and started that way, then I started jobs that were absolutely calm. There was no chaos at all. I just went in, did my job, and for 6 months or half a year or whatever, and then I was gone. And then I'd come back. And it was quite a nice dance after that, realizing that I was doing that to myself. I was causing the chaos. Right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's...
And again, that's state kings, right? Sorry.
Yeah, expectation is another one of those subtle background players. And I think I've built my business with around this expectation of ease and flow, you know, who I have. Like, I have no problems with my people and scheduling or anything. Like, it's never a problem. And I hear a lot of, like, the others troubleshooting, you know, what if this, what if that? My base expectation is so strong and like must be divine. It's glorious. Like never, I don't like whoever comes in my door is perfect, right on time. If yeah. they need to flex their schedule time, like date, time, cancel late, like whatever, it's like always on time. And yeah. living from that place is so nice. There's so much less pre-worrying you're doing because like the like just letting it be for you, which is one of the simple, more popular phrases. Like if you can really hold that in your belly and like let it be everywhere, things are so nice.
No, Shady, that's exactly what state is. So you go in mind and you see your clients as being happy little clients with, you know what I mean? There's just peacefulness, and then that happens. Right? And I remember when I first started my business, and I was sitting there thinking about all the things I had to explain to clients about what I was doing and all of this, and I ran through all those scenarios, and I had in the beginning very difficult clients until I realized this same thing that you're talking about. That if I stopped and just went in and started to imagine happy clients that enjoyed spiritual evolution and wanted to experience an acceleration of that and whatever, then all of a sudden clients started showing up that were very easy clients and happy, and I had a happy, easy business, really. Right? So for those people out there, you're only having difficulty, take a look at it. If you're having difficulty with your business, stop. And just imagine ease with your business and notice what happened.
I teach that using the idea of dance partners. So if you are dancing in like a style that doesn't work for you, like recognize you're half that dance. So what do you want to dance? And I think there is a level of ownership when we're looking at, I think there is that, it, to me, it's two part, in that there is the shift, the request for shift and the experience. And then there is that underlying what must I believe to be true that this is what I'm asking for? And sometimes that underlying peace, like, it'll work itself out. I really allow and love that things are, they'll kind of do themselves. But if you are stuck, I think it is helpful to ask, like, where are you out of balance that your partner dances like that? So, you know, there's so much content on Instagram about, you know, narcissists and, like, you know, it's sort of like, where, how is that possible? Like, how are you dancing that is possibly your experience? So rather than thinking like, how do I get around people like that? It's more like, how do I not dance? Who do I need to be that I don't dance with people like that?
Although I walk through the valley of death, thy rod and thy staff will comfort me. I mean, they told us that then, right? You could be walking right through the valley of death, and as long as you're anchored to peacefulness within yourself, nothing can harm you. And just like what you're talking about with this right now, it's about who are you now? Am I peace? Am I praying to the God of peace with my whole being? Or am I praying to fear with my whole being? And shift it. And there's ways to shift it by imagining yourself in the state of being that you want to be in. And starting to look at that sound, get familiar with it. What would it feel like? And then step into it. And then you're free of this one. Like they say, fear and love cannot live in the same body at the same time. You're either in fear or you're in love.
Yeah, I think it's interesting too. Like, I guess thematically today, what's occurring to me to underline is the limits of what one can imagine based on what one has imagined before. Like, kind of like, what color palette do you have? And I do find that desire to paint differently is enough to expand the palette, and it can happen rather quickly. But I find that too, like, in unbalanced relationship dynamics or where there is continuous lack or like anything is kind of like off, that there is some level of sacrifice built into the thinking as to why this thing that's not okay has to be okay. So it's not okay. And the mind is like, but I'm going to tell you why it is okay. And it might be because you think this comes from there or this will come later or whatever. And so that little trade-off, you essentially put something outside of yourself that can never be outside of yourself. And that is, like you were saying with your jobs, like that then sets the tone for whatever that is. If you are advocating an element of your wellness, your wholeness to something outside by saying it's okay when it's not okay. And it doesn't have to be okay for everybody, but if it's not okay for you, then it's not, like, there's something that you think is outside. And it's not to say, you know, don't focus through discomfort if you're working on something. It's not saying relationships don't have stuff that comes up. It's saying, like, being honest, are you accepting something at a level below what is true and correct for you because you think there's some reason. Like, if you go to your mind and you have a reason for it, you're wrong. Well, story. I lived that one out for a while. Several different ways.
I think that's it for today.
Covered a lot.
Yeah. I think so. So thank you for being part of this again.
Thank you for inviting me. Pleasure, true pleasure.
And we'll do it again. I enjoy these chats with the genius.
Yeah, this is really good for me, so I really appreciate it. It's very fun and I hope helpful to the people that are listening, and if there's a direction that they would like or topic they would like us to go to, I'm always happy to take.
Yeah.
A hotline.
Okay, that sounds good too. We can do that. Anything that people should know that's coming up that you're doing, courses or?
Yeah, I'm looking at creating, one of the things that I'm learning, or allowing rather, outside of my box is like, I'm just going to do stuff the way that I do stuff, and it probably won't look like anything anybody else is doing, and that's fine. So I am incubating the idea of an intuition class, training people to connect with their own inner voice, their own sense of knowing. I'm not sure what that'll look like yet, but that's on the horizon. And then I continue to offer one-to-one sessions. And I also have a workshop on, it's a flex workshop. So basically, like, bring whoever you want. We'll structure it however you want. But the content is really around awareness. So how to be an aware parent, which to me is really how to love yourself in a way that you're demonstrating it so that your kids learn how to love themselves.
Right. Exactly. Good. Good.
Yeah.
And they can reach you?
At habitbook.com.
Okay. I just got back from Dawson Creek. I was up there for a full week. In Dawson Creek. I went up there to take in a breath class and then found that people wanted to see me while I was up there. So I rented a little office and seen the folks up there at Dawson Creek. But mainly I work online. And so seeing people in person is kind of a rarity unless I'm doing it, you know, my events, which started to spark me to do my events again. And so I'm going to go back up to Dawson Creek and do a one day Awaken the God Within event. And then, you know, see people afterwards. And people can always see me online. And the training. Now, when you said about being unique in the fact that my sessions are like Shaylee's here, I have no idea what I'm going to do until I meet you. I really don't, because I don't know where you're at, what you need to do, whatever. And I have turned my training into that too, where I teach people to be a trans alchemist, because it's got to fit the person. And I noticed a big problem a while back was that when we try to get the person to fit into the program, we miss the greatest part of the program, which is helping people to unleash their own potentials, who they are, what they do. So my course in trans alchemy, you get to be a different type of hypnotherapist, and one that actually molds the sessions to the client, where the client's at. And the same thing with my training is that I need to look at the person and find out where we build a kind of a structure for your business using hypnotherapy, but instead of you becoming a hypnotherapist, you're allowing it to fit you and you, what you're doing in your work, because people have so many gifts, right? And I, you know, for a while there, I was watching them trying to throw away their gifts and become something different, which was a hypnotherapist. And that doesn't fly with me, because the gifts that you bring to hypnotherapy are valuable. And there's nothing like your experience files to add to hypnotherapy and create with it. So that's how I do it.
That's beautiful. That's great. Yeah, I think that's really powerful because, I agree. There's so much discounting about what somebody already is and can do. And on the path to become more, what was gets pushed off when what was is really what's come. Like you said, it's kind of like, how do you allow and support what's already there? You know, it's a new tool, but I think that's great. Great job. I'm on board with that.
Thank you.
No, it's great.
Well, thank you for being on today, and we'll do it again, and blessings to you.
Thank you, and to you.
Thank you. And we'll talk to you soon. Bye for now. We'll be right back.